He's written about girls wrestling in creamed corn, hit men with skin problems, and how to make your own stigmata. But now Carl Hiaasen has written a children's book. It's called Hoot, and it's about some kids in Florida who try to save an owl's habitat from being destroyed to build a pancake house. Hiaasen says his publisher asked him if he'd like to try writing a children's book, and he agreed, so that his young nieces and nephew could read something he's written.
I thought they're just a little young for some of the stuff in the grown-up. Now, I'm not going to hand strip these to a 9-year-old. I mean, I may be sick, but I'm not that sick. And so this was an opportunity to really, sort of as a present to them, to give them something they could read that had the same sort of sense of humor and the same sensibility as the grown-up novels without some of the more bizarre elements.
Did you find that you had to make it less sophisticated in terms of themes?
Not at all. And I've always contended that that kids are better readers in some ways than grown-ups are. By that, I mean their own instincts for what's right and wrong in the real world are easier to aim for as a writer than grown-ups who have a lot of worries and concerns and clouded issues that you don't have. When you're 9 and 10 or 11, it's real simple. They're going to bulldoze all these owls. Is that right or is that wrong? You took 40 sixth graders and asked them that question. What's right? Do you want a pancake house in your neighborhood, or do you want all these owls bulldozed to make that happen? And 39 of them are going to raise their hand and say, well, it's wrong. You just don't kill a bunch of helpless little creatures just to make a profit. And I would submit that's the proper reaction to that scenario, and it's a whole different reaction than you're going to get from a class full of MBAs sitting there now. They've got to ponder, you know, land use issues, property rights issues, zoning variations, all this kind of stuff. That a kid is, it makes a real simple and visceral judgment about something that's right or wrong, and my guess is they're much closer to being right than we mm-hmm. are.
Now, you're also a journalist and a columnist, and I'm wondering if events in real life and dealing with children, events such as Columbine, for example, affected the way you decided to portray these characters.
Not really, but more. I think I was more affected by my own childhood and growing up in Florida and having it change so radically in my own lifetime. And when I was a kid, what I saw was every day a new set of bulldozers and backhoes and destroying some other piece of what I considered, you know, our own little personal wilderness. And so there was really no way to fight that kind of progress, you know, which sort of moved like a cancer cell through South Florida. There's nothing you could do, but we certainly tried. We had our own little strategies, and some of which surface in this novel. I mean, we pulled up survey stakes or rearranged them just to see if we could slow things down a little bit. Certainly didn't stop anything, but the kids in the book try some stuff like that because the grown-ups in this book don't behave very well for the most part. And they act kind of foolishly sometimes, as we do in real life.
Well, I wonder, your adult novels do have quite a cynical take on human nature, at least human nature in Florida, that it's filled with corrupt individuals. So how do you present a rosier view for kids, or don't you?
Well, I mean, I think you present a realistic view that there are some bad people, and there are some corrupt people, and there are good people. Most kids in this country in 2002... are fully aware that there's some real, real bad people out in the world. And if they're not, they're living under a rock somewhere. So I think the idea is to present a world where there are wonderful possibilities, and there are also many, many reasons to be careful and cautious and at times cynical.
I wonder if you have a section of your book you'd like to read for us.
I can read a little section when the owls sort of first surface. And this is a section, oddly enough, that involves grown-ups, but it involves the grown-ups who are going to be critical in the telling of this story and who are going to be central in the kids' battle to sort of save the owls. Walking back to the patrol car, the policeman stumbled and fell down. Curly grabbed him under one arm and hoisted him to his feet. Both men were mildly embarrassed. "Stupid owls," said Curly. The policeman brushed the dirt and grass burrs off his uniform. "You say owls?" Curly gestured at a hole in the ground. It was as big around as one of Mother Paula's famous buttermilk flapjacks. A mound of loose white sand was visible at the entrance. "That's what you tripped over," Curly informed Officer Delinko. "An owl lives down there?" The policeman bent over and studied the hole. "Well, how big are they?" "About as tall as a beer can." "No kidding," said Officer Delinko. "But I ain't never seen one, officially speaking." And then the police officer himself starts thinking about, well, how could such a little tiny creature live down there, and what's going to happen to them? And that's sort of what is going to happen to them is sort of at the center of the story.
Carl Hyson, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.